IsraelScene.com. You're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve.
And this is Yoram. Steve, a few months ago, we did a program, an interview with Rabbi Yitzchak Marmelstein on Rav Kook and a CD that Rabbi Marmelstein created in honor of Rav Kook using the poetry, where he reads the poetry of Rav Kook with a small jazz group alongside of him. I think people enjoyed that. The jazz was pretty good. Now the group that Rabbi Marmelstein recorded with, called Greg Wall's Later Prophets, is coming to Israel, and they will do a series. This time it'll be a series of concerts, of events. The first one will be on the 28th of the Hebrew month of Av, which this year comes out to be August 18th. In Jerusalem at Rav Kook's home, what was Rav Kook's home, and then on August 23rd it will be in Tel Aviv, and on August 24th it will be back in Jerusalem at Beit Avichai, and on the 26th it will be in Yafo, and on the 27th it will be in Haifa, and on the 29th they're going to go up to Tzfat. And I thought this was a good time to share with you and our listeners an interview I did with Rabbi Marmelstein at Rabbi Kook's house in Jerusalem. And maybe as an introduction to it, we can listen to some of the music that Rabbi Marmelstein and his musician friends did when they were here in Tel Aviv several months ago. I think you were there and recorded some of their music. So if we start with that, and then we'll go to Rabbi Kook's house in downtown Jerusalem on Rav Kook Street.
Let's listen to it. It was, by the way, a great evening of really wonderful musicians and fine music. So here we go.
So I'd like to encourage people who are here or people who will be traveling here in this next period of time, to join one of these evenings. You can find out more. The email address is haorot, H-A-O-R-O-T, @gmail.com. And Rabbi Marmelstein will be glad to answer any of your questions and to update you on the performances as they come along.
Great. Here we go.
There is the one who sings the song of their life. V'yesh asher shar shirat ha'uma. And then there is that part of us that sings the song of our people. We leave the circle of our individual self, finding it without sufficient breath, without an idealistic basis. We aspire toward the heights. We attach ourselves with a gentle love to the whole community of Israel. Together with her, we sing her songs. We feel grieved in her afflictions, delight in her hopes. Veyesh. And then there is that part of us that reaches to more distant realms, going beyond the boundary of Israel. Lashir et shirat ha'adam, to sing the song of humankind. Ve'yesh. And then there is that part of us that rises toward wider horizons. We link ourselves with all existence, with all God's creatures, with all worlds. We sing our song with all of them.
We'll start here on the outside of the house. Next door to their building, you can hear the machines going crazy. And the plaque here reads as follows: Bet David, neighborhood, and Rabbi Kook's house. This small Jerusalem courtyard and neighborhood, with 10 dwellings, was built in 1873 by philanthropist David Reese. There are two cisterns in the courtyard and memorial plaques on the walls. The upper story, added in 1902, served as the residence and yeshiva of Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak Cook, 1865 to 1935, who was the first Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Israel. So we're in this noisy courtyard, and now we're going to go into a quiet courtyard. Aha, so now we step into a quiet courtyard, and compared to the racket outside, I suppose it was like this 100 years ago as well. We're going to be taken on this tour by our friend Rabbi Yitzchak Marmelstein, whose singing and recitation of Rav Kook's works we played recently. And he is our Rav Kook guru, and not only ours. I think he's the Rav Kook guru for other people as well. Tell us about this courtyard, Yitzchak.
Well, this is the Rav Kook's mikveh was around here somewhere, down here. But this is the courtyard of a dwelling right outside the gates of Me'er Sha'arim, in between sort of the Old Jerusalem and the New Jerusalem, in between Me'er Sha'arim and Rehov Yafo. And when Rav Kook became the first chief rabbi of Jerusalem and then the first chief rabbi of the land of Israel, they felt he needed a place to live that was worthy and of his efforts and respectable. And a philanthropist, Harry Fischel, built the second floor on this for Rav Kook's residence and for his synagogue and Beit Midrash. And then in 1923, he moved in here, and he lived here till his passing in 1935. And it's an extraordinary place. I mean, this is where the revolution took place, and the stuff that happened within these walls is and actually the stuff of legend that's only now starting to be known, but the entire revolution that the Torah Israel is, the Torah of the land of Israel emanating from the return to Israel and its process, that entire Torah was seeded and set into place by Rav Kook. And so this is where the in a certain way the modern state of Israel, part of it was birthed.
We see here two cisterns. It mentions that in the plaque. I'm not sure why it's so significant that they mention it in the plaque, but it was before, you know, pipe water and bottled water. That's how people got water in this city. There's no natural, there's a very small natural well or spring on the south side of the old city. And other than that, people collected water during the winter and stored it in a cistern in the courtyard. Every house had a courtyard. And the water was taken out with either a hand pump or a bucket. And that's the water that there was until the next rain, which meant by the end of the summer, it was probably not particularly tasty or sweet-smelling. Now we're about to go into the second entrance, and here we have some photographs posted on the wall of Rav Kook and the pioneers. He made a very famous trip through the pioneer communities in 1927. Where are we now?
Now we're in the entrance to Rav Kook's house. The entrance was through these stairs that were going up a flight of stairs. And this area was the garden in front of his house, and may it be restored very quickly. And we're about to walk into one of the most special places in Eretz Yisrael.
Also coming into this building this afternoon are a group of Habonim Dror youth from Australia, and we will hear some of their yakety chat in the background, maybe. No, I think we're not really going to be welcome in that room. And if we were in that room, Yitzchak, if we were in that room, what room would that be?
What we see in it is the big room where Rav Kook's Beit Midrash is. And it's the room where he greeted people when they had Suda Shlishi. And they had all sorts of public events. And that's where the Beit Midrash.
Is it still a Beit Midrash? Was the Beit Midrash still functioning?
Well, there are events here, and we'd like to bring lots of people here to learn Torah, and it's the best place in Jerusalem to learn Torah. No special room. There's his chair, his desk, his writing stand, and this is really where the inspiration was hanging out. He would write in his notebooks extraordinary enlightenments as they'd be pouring through him. all times of day and night. I have the cookbook with me.
We'll have a photo of this in our gallery. This is a very small, it's a large closet. Really, it's an anteroom, I guess they would call it, off of the Beit Midrash room. The walls are white stucco. The doors, the desks, and the cabinets are beautiful, relatively old, dark wood. And the things Rav Kook wrote, one you can hear them on the songs that Rabbi Yitzchak sings, and then we can listen to him recite a piece from the Rav Kook.
Waves from the higher realm act on our souls ceaselessly. The stirrings of our inner spiritual movements are the result of the sounds released by the violin of our soul as it listens to the echoes of the sound emanating from the divine realm. And it was in this room that Rav Kook was listening to the waves from the higher realm and channeling and leaving us with an extraordinary, extraordinary treasure. And then the stories are told of the people that came into this room at all times of days and night. It was always open except for an hour and a half in the morning where he was studying Talmud with Rabbi Yitzchak Ariely, who became the next Rosh Yeshiva. That the rest of the time, anybody could come in, no appointment necessary. If it was important, people had to judge, and then otherwise he would go and be doing his things, or he'd be writing letters. He wrote hundreds of letters all over the world to help people in every possible circumstance where a letter from him could help. And all of these are published, and they make an extraordinary document of the most extraordinary sort of Jewish leader we've had in, for the last hundreds of years. And at the same time, he would be learning Talmud Bavli and writing his commentary on the Talmud. And when flashes of inspiration and poetry would come, he would fill notebooks with insights. And he would go into deep prayer here, and he fled into this room when he found out about the massacres in 1929. This is where it all took place, and nobody has sat in that chair since he passed away. And it's a very special place to come and meditate and invite divine inspiration.
It's really interesting being in this old kind of building that I only see from the outside. Everything, there's really a circular hallway. It's square, but it runs around the inside of the building from which you look down into a courtyard, which offers a little bit of shade. On the courtyard on the other side is full of trees, so that offers a whole lot more shade. And everything here is connected.
Here's that our friend here, Nechama, who has the great privilege of working here at Beit HaRav and organizing things here, is telling us that about this room, which used to be the dining room, and there's the porch sukkah off the dining room. And then a few months ago, people came here like in their 80s, and they were really like enthusiastic and near God, like emotional that they could come back here, and they started telling Nechama about, look what took place here. The Rav used to sit here, and
someone said that she was a friend of the daughter of Cook's daughter, and her parents were very friendly with Rav Kook and his wife, and they used to come, and she used to come, so she felt at home. And for us, it was really moving to hear about Rav Kook, not as a Rav, but as a regular person, about his everyday life and how he was. She told us how soft he was toward them, they were children. I would only add that it's amazing to hear the small stories about them. I'm organizing the Masa HaMoshavot
tour of the agricultural communities.
Right.
That Rav Kook took in 1927. Like I said, there's a photograph outside.
He did it a few times. He went to the Moshavot a few times, and we are doing the first one, 1913. We are going for 2 days with a bus to the Moshavot, to some of the Moshavot. We cannot do what they did in a month. We go to Chadera, Zichron Yaakov, Merchavia, Kfar Tavor, Poria, Rosh Pina, Kineret, Yesod HaMala, which is also a lot. It's not all they did, but it's a lot. And we meet there with people from all the different ideological parts of Jewish Israeli life today. And it's very, very interesting. It's really very interesting.
I think you should consider taking Rabbi Yitzchak, because he speaks to another group of people. The Rav Kook, much of the Rav Kook that he teaches, is Rav Kook that's very sympathetic to non-religious people, and particularly to religious people who have a universal outlook. And some of the places you name, I know Merchavia, a very old kibbutz, Goldie Meir was a kibbutznik there.
One that a year and a half ago, on one of the trips that I accompanied, because I wanted to see how it works and, you know, to improve conditions and so on, and I asked people on the bus if they have small stories, if they have stories or reminiscences about Rav Kook or things like this. So two stories that I would tell you. One was a woman. She was about 80 few years. She was on the bus on the Tiyul, and she said, I remember when I was 3 or 4 years old, Rav Kook was in Yerushalayim, and he came on Tisha B'Av. He came to Bet Knesset Yeshurun. All the children were standing along the wall, and Rav Kook went from one child to another and gave us a candy. And I remember the candy that I got. She said, from one child to the other, he went patiently in there. And the other story is about a woman, also a woman that was on the same tiul. When we come to Kfar Tavor, and in Kfar Tavor they tell us that there are still, it's a place that a very nice combination between religious and non-religious people, and the religious life there are very respectful, and the non-religious respect very much the religious, and they have one school together. They still go to one school, and it's all from the time that Rav Kook was there, and he sent a Rav to the place. Now, he had the yeshiva. He wanted this kind of rabbanim that will be open to the world and to the public and so on and so on. So she was about 12 years old when she was on a tiyul. She is from Rehovot. And with the teacher, they came, the whole class came to Kfar Tavor to visit. At that time, the Rav was Rav Ben Zion Levin, who was a student of Rav Kook and studied here in the yeshiva, was sent by Rav Kook to be the Rav in Kfar Tavor, and to be such a Rav that people would like him, also non-religious. So they came to, so the Rav invited the class to his home, and they were all sitting, all the children were sitting around the table, and the Rebbetzin was serving tea.
The rabbi's wife.
Rabbi's wife, yes. was serving tea and cakes, and the Rav was sitting in front of the table and asking each girl, what is your husband, your father, sorry, do? What is he doing? So when it one said, my father is the head of a bank, one was, you know, everybody was. And when it came to her, she was very much ashamed because her father owned a makolet, which is a food store, you know, that's all. And she said it quietly. And so Harav Levin raised his hand and said, your father? Hamasbia lechol chai ratzon. And she...
Which is a translation of the prayer, that which refers to he who gives all beings nourishment.
And she told her the story in when we were there in the Museum of Kfar Tavor, telling about Rav Kook and his students, how they were dealing with people just as he did. And she was crying, still feeling as there. And she said, he gave me such a good feeling. I, who was ashamed before, I felt like my father really had something, an important role in the world. Kinneret was a moshava. There is a kibbutz nearby that is a kibbutz. Oh, Kinneret, the moshava and the Kinneret. But we have stories. Someone wrote us the whole story about the Rav that Rav Kook sent to Kinneret.
Thank you again. It should be said that people are invited and are welcome to come and visit here. There's, as I said before, there's now a group of young people from Australia visiting here. There are events here. There's a website of this, the Rav Kook House, and there's a movie which is shown, and people are welcome to come in and enjoy the quiet and the inspiration.
So we invite congregations and the shuls and synagogues to contact with us. They can find our telephones and emails in the web, and then we can organize Masa HaMoshavot in English. We do it here also in English, but if we have a whole group before, it's for 50 people on a bus. We go out for 2 days with an English-speaking guide, and we learn about Harav Kook and how he dealt with people and his meetings with non-secular and non-religious people. Right?
It was a revolutionary month. The things that were both seeded and the stories they tell what happened that month are very powerful. And it's also because we went with Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. And there was the old yeshiva, and they were together lovingly the whole time, and it was just very...
These were two competing rabbis on some... At the entrance, there's a bookshelf, or a display of books, more correctly, under glass. And one of them was written by a woman named...
Galila Ron Feder Amit, a very known author for children, especially for children, and she... Her books were translated to English, Japanese, and other languages as well.
What struck me is that it's the cover, at least, is in a cartoon form, and it's very much like the Tintin style of drawings. It's like Tintin visits Rav Kook in Jerusalem. Wonderful, thank you very much. Excuse me, are you Nadav? Are you Nadav? I'm curious, my children were in Habonim in the States. And I can't imagine that at the period when they were in Habonim in the States, they would have been brought to the home of Rav Kook. How do you put together the kibbutz movement and this Orthodox man?
We're doing a week on the history of modern Israeli society. So we're going to all sorts of different things. And the topic of today is religion and society. So we also went and spoke to a Reform rabbi today.
Who is that?
His name is Gilad Kariv. Uh-huh. And we also had a tour of the Old City, and we've also been talking about Haredi Judaism. So, looking at different aspects of Judaism in Israel today.
Is this the year course?
It's the Habonim year course.
Is the Beit HaMidrash, the Beit Knesset, the house of prayer and the house of study. We're standing here in front of the Bima, where the Torah is, ark with the Torah, the steps leading to it. And this chair right beside it is Rav Kook's chair and prayer space. And that chair was given to him by King Henry, or whoever was the king at the time of the First World War, the King of England, because he had such great affection for Rav Kook. When Rav Kook left, because Rav Kook was a rabbi in London for 2 years, not coincidentally during the time of the Balfour Declaration, and he was very strongly involved in the voices that led to the passing of the Balfour Declaration, he gave him that chair, and then Rav Kook, it was here in things. And here you have a photograph with Rav Kook teaching, and you see this room filled with students.
And wearing fedoras.
Wearing fedoras, right.
It's far from a large room and certainly far from a grand room. This is really a very, hopefully we'll have a photograph of this too. It's a very simple.
It can hold 100 people. It can hold 150 people and squeezing in even more, but there's his sukkah. You see part of the wall, the ceiling is thatched, and that was his sukkah. That above there was a detachable roof, but they had like a full-time sukkah in the Beit Midrash built in for him. And he would talk here. Sometimes he would begin and they would give talks, and his talks, he gave public talks a few times a week. Balshanei Lashon, people that were studying Hebrew, would come in order to hear what Hebrew he would create that week. And he would be like, they could not believe the Hebrew that he was speaking, and his use of all these things that had never been heard before, because the language was in its infancy as a spoken language there. Ben Yehuda lived just down the street here, 50 yards away, and he would come here to consult all the time when he had his dictionary and was working on it. You can imagine he'd probably come to the small room we were in, but wherever Rav Kook was, he would come and they would have a discussion. And then he would give talks here, Shavuot. He would teach from Maimonides, the book of mitzvot. Saturday afternoon, he would teach sitting in that room with, he would have like a Hasidic Suda Shlishi, and he would teach according to the Chabad Hasidut, because his mother was from Chabad. But then the other ones was, once he began to speak, he would hold people spellbound for like 2 hours, 3 hours. Like, there wasn't anything else happening. There was no TV, no radio. And here it was, people would come here, and the most extraordinary weaving of Torah and beautiful modern Hebrew, flowing, and poetry. People were spellbound. And I asked someone who was with Rav Kook till he was 8 years old, the son of Rav Kook's student, the Nazir, Shar Yashiv Cohen, and I asked him, what was it like around Rav Kook? And he said, ragua, calm. He was in this state of enlightenment and self-actualization, and it was real. And the people were coming here all the time to consult with him on every possible issue, and he would continue to stream forth. One of the main visitors here was Chaim Nachman Bialik, who was younger than Rav Kook, who studied in the yeshiva. Rav Kook had studied after Rav Kook was there. Then Rav Kook was very encouraging of him to come here. And but they would say, because Bialik was also one of these people that had a tremendous flow, charisma all the time, but they said about him that he was like that, except when he went to visit Rav Kook. Then he would ask a few questions and be quiet the rest of the time, just listening and taking in. And he wrote about Rav Kook's poetry. I'll show you. He looked at his poetry and he said, he saw that it's written without any erasure, just as a single flow of thought. But Bialik saw Rav Kook as his master in poetry. Let me read you a little bit from the cookbook. Understanding reached by one's own mind is the highest expression of spiritual progress. Everything that is learned by study is absorbed from the outside and is of lesser significance as compared with what is thought through within the soul itself. All that's acquired by study is a profound strategy as to how to draw on what is hidden in the heart and the depths of our soul, our inner understanding, the knowledge within. Knowledge in our inner being continues to stream forth. It creates. It acts. Say this in the name of the cookbook. When love-possessed people see the world, living creatures full of quarrels, hatred, persecutions, and conflicts, we must yearn with all our being to share in those aspirations that move life toward comprehensiveness, unity, peace, and tranquility. We must join ourselves with the all and for the sake of all. Confronting the human scene, finding divisions among nations, religions, parties, goals, and conflict, we endeavor with all our might to bring all together, to mend and to unite. We want that every particular shall be preserved and developed, and that the collective whole shall be united and abounding in peace.
All right.